dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and your guide for this installment of the War of Ideas waged here by some of the very, very best in the business, starting with Congressman-elect Alan West of the 22nd District of Florida, one of the folks you'll be hearing a lot about, both here at Secure Freedom Radio and elsewhere, mark my words, as he will be one of the most formidable new members of the United States House of Representatives come January. We'll be talking with him about national security in the new Congress. Lieutenant Colonel West brings tremendous knowledge and competency and, I think, authority to this question, and we look forward to both hearing what he has to say about it and, more to the point, what he's going to be doing about it come January. Segment three, we have Diana West, the author of Death of the Grown-Up. She'll be talking about, will this new Congress, among other things, get right the threat posed to us by Sharia? What will it do to counteract it? And finally, Sarah Carter in segment four, our go-to gal on national security journalism. On Thursdays, we have Sarah giving us an update on homeland insecurity, an issue that Congressman Pete King, a man who we hope will be the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee in the next Congress, is expressing serious concerns about, and properly so. So all of that straight ahead. But first, I want to speculate with you, or at least ruminate with you, about what the Tea Party wants. This is, of course, now the parlor game being played in Washington with considerable urgency, because the Democrats, having been seriously set back in terms of their agenda by this emerging force in American politics, are anxious to figure out how to, I think, game the Tea Party. Portray them as extremists on the one hand, figure out where they can be co-opted on the other, and in any other way, sort of neutralized as a force to be reckoned with. Meanwhile, the Republicans know that they owe, in no small measure, the sizable victory that they achieved to the sentiments expressed by the Tea Party here. And they're now trying to figure out how do they integrate the agenda of the Tea Party into Republican Party programs. This has particular significance for the issue that we'll be talking momentarily about with several of our guests, but specifically the question of earmarks in the Congress. This is a term many of us are not all that familiar with. It's become kind of a rallying cry for some in the Tea Party movement, for other Republicans who have now forsworn the practice of using the congressional power of the purse to write into the law additional unrequested programs, that is to say, unrequested by the executive branch. It has been, for many years, a practice that has been abused. Not in every instance by any means, but in some. Some of them have been egregious abuses. One of the most notorious, I suspect, was that Don Young effected, the so-called Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska. Don Young at the time was a senior member of the House of Representatives, and he put in a multi-million dollar slug of dough for the purpose of building a bridge to connect an island that nobody lived on, as I recall. In any event, it became kind of a talisman of the problem of unchecked, abusive use of the purse strings by members of Congress to endear themselves to their constituents or otherwise feather their own nests. Obviously, that is both reprehensible and unsupportable, particularly in time like this, where we're facing acute fiscal difficulties. And the Tea Party movement has appreciated that and has helped express it in a way that has powerfully concentrated the minds, certainly of Republicans, in this new Congress. But I was speaking with Hugh Hewitt, who we have the privilege of appearing here in Washington each weeknight on the Salem radio outlet here, WRC. And Hugh Hewitt was rather cranky, I think it's fair to say, yesterday. I guess he had not had enough sleep, but in any event, he gave me a very hard time in our conversation on his program. And one of the things that we talked about was the question of earmarks as they relate to the national security. And what I want you to think about, because I believe this is an urgent issue for those of us who want both to have more limited government, certainly more efficient government, and yet maintain a strong national security, if in the interest of appealing to the Tea Party movement and more generally demonstrating fiscal responsibility, the new Congress actually carries out its promise to forswear the use of earmarks as they relate to the defense budget, we may well see Congress abdicating its arguably most important responsibility, which is to provide for the common defense. It has the constitutional responsibility to raise armies and support them. If Congress says we're not going to make changes to the defense budget, changes that have historically been necessary because presidents don't always get the defense budget request right. And that's perhaps never been more true than under the Obama administration, which is now talking about cutting $100 billion out of the defense budget over the next 10 years. Now, I have heard the argument that there's waste, fraud, and abuse in the Pentagon, and look, you're going to find that in any large bureaucracy. But $100 billion is cutting not waste, fraud, and abuse. It's not even cutting fat or muscle. It's cutting bone in the Defense Department. And were Congress now to say, as a matter of budgetary discipline and restraint, we're not going to make any changes to what the administration is doing, I fear that we will find the defense capabilities of this country grievously weakened, a new hollowing out of our military taking place. And as I mentioned to Hugh last night, there are a number of examples where Congress has in the past made earmarks that were absolutely vital to fixing problems that the administration had not identified. A prime example is the Predator drone. That was a congressional earmark pushed primarily by a fellow by the name of Representative Jerry Lewis of California. He recognized a need. It was fought tooth and tong initially by the Air Force and the Pentagon. Thank God that earmark took place, because we now have a capability that is vital in projecting American power around the world, including notably against bad guys hiding in places like Pakistan and perhaps in the future in Yemen. Similarly, funding for the C-17 airlifter is something that wouldn't happen, needs to continue to happen, wouldn't happen without congressional add-ons. The V-22 aircraft, a vital component for the United States Marine Corps' power projection capabilities, would not be with us today had it not been for congressional action, earmarks, if you will. Ships in our Navy wouldn't be there were it not for these add-ons. The armored MRAPs, as they're called, vehicles that have been vital to saving many of our servicemen and women's lives, would not be there, but not had it not been for these congressional add-ons. It's, in all these ways, we have seen a vital role played by the United States Congress. It needs to continue to play that role, even though it sounds seductively attractive to say, no more add-ons. In the national security interests of the United States, there better continue to be the flexibility to make them, where the Pentagon, where the Defense Department's overseers in the White House are making serious mistakes. We'll be talking more about that with Alan West momentarily. Stay tuned.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Ooh, that smells good.
Well, look who came out of his man cave.
Game must be over.
Oh, babe, just checking on you. And dinner.
Well, your stomach clock is fast. It's gonna be a while. How about some celery?
Nah, that's rabbit food. There must be something good in here.
Well, why don't you... why don't you...
You okay?
Oh.
Honey!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke. Many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk. But it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined the superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal, daily, national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined for what I consider to be one of the most important segments in the time we've been doing this program, and that is one in which we get to welcome to our air a past guest, but a man who now is coming to us in a totally different capacity. He is Congressman-elect Alan West of the 22nd District of Florida, a war hero by my lights, a man who has served his country both in uniform and out with distinction, but is now about to don a new mantle, and we look forward with tremendous expectation to your service to our country in the 112th Congress. Alan West, again, thank you for your service, past and future, and thank you so much for joining us today at Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, Frank, it is always a pleasure to be with you, and I just thank you for all the support that you lent and the opportunity to share my vision on, you know, previous interviews on Secure Freedom.
Well, I want you to do it again, because obviously there'll be a lot more folks paying attention to what you're saying now than when you were running for Congress. You are a retired lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, decorated combat veteran. You're a man who made no secret of your strong views on national security matters, both involving the wars that we're in at the moment, the threat from Sharia, the importance of protecting this country against emerging threats. And indeed, I think a campaign theme of yours was restoring American exceptionalism. And I'd like you to just talk a bit about all of that by way of sort of introducing you to this audience in your new capacity.
Well, I think it's so important that we recognize that, you know, in 234 years, the incredible things that we've been able to accomplish in this constitutional republic that we call the United States of America is what makes us exceptional, and it's because of the exceptionalism of the American people. And when you look at some of the especially economic issues that we face, we must once again turn to the American people so that the investment, the ingenuity, the innovation that they bring with their ideas, their determination and hard work, that is the means by which we will have long-term sustainable economic growth, which is truly part of your national power, is your economic strength and your economic viability. So it is important that we recognize that Keynesian economic theory, the whole tax and spend philosophy of big government, is not the thing that has made America great, and it really is the antithesis of who we are and what we've been able to establish. So I think that's critical to understand as far as restoring the exceptionalism and the prosperity of our great nation. But it is also key to recognize that you can be as prosperous as you wish, but if we're not securing the American people, that does not bode well either.
Alan West, let's talk about what I think may be the tension between those two points. On the one hand, I think it's clear that the message from the Tea Party movement, most especially, I was talking about it in our monologue a moment ago, is that they expect greater fiscal discipline out of the new Congress. There's pressure on earmarks as a means of exercising that discipline on the one hand. And on the other, there is, I sense, and I'd like you to speak to this because the Tea Party movement was very important in your electoral victory. There seems, on the basis of my limited exposure to them, no doubt that the people that make up the Tea Party movement are as concerned about securing our country as you've just indicated you are. What are we to expect from Congress as they try to wrestle with fiscal discipline on the one hand and providing for the common defense on the other?
Well, I think that that's what you just said was a key aspect. And when you look at those five mandates of the federal government to ensure domestic tranquility, to establish justice, to provide for the common defense, for promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. So when you talk about providing for the common defense, that's one of the key mandates of the federal government. But as we move forward, I think that what we must look at is how do we tailor the defense sector toward the 21st century battlefield and be focused on the strategic goals and objectives that will make us successful and victorious. And that's one of the things that I keep harping on, is we have to get away from occupation, nation-building style warfare, and be enemy-oriented and deny his sanctuaries and cutting off his funding and his ability to move men, materiel, and other forms of support. We've got to win the information operations war. We've got to cordon him also that we reduce his sphere of influence, you know, all across the world. So those are the type of things we need to look at and make sure that we are providing the tools of success out there so that we can, provide for that common defense. So I think that we have to look at the systems that we are promoting from that.
Alan West, from what you've just said, it sounds as though this is something that can't be done on the cheap. We may be able to be more efficient in some aspects of this, but what you've just described sounds as though it anticipates a continuing and maybe even increasing investment in the capabilities to do the sorts of things that you've just described as necessary to the common defense going forward. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that your economy is part of it. Energy independence is part of it. And with energy independence, when we start to develop our full spectrum of energy resources in this country, that puts Americans back to work, which strengthens our economy, which takes away the strength of our enemies and adversaries. So there are many different ways we need to understand this 21st century battlefield and how we can leverage all elements of our nation's power against it. And like I said, we just got to get away from this nation-building focus. I think that that is economically hurting us.
Yeah. In terms of understanding our enemy, which I think you've done as much as probably any congressional candidate to help expand the awareness of not only your constituents, but a great many others. And I count on you to be carrying that on in your new capacity. What is your sense of the willingness of this new Congress, to take on Sharia as the enemy threat doctrine?
Well, you know, I have not had the opportunity to sit down with all the other new members. I will be giving all the members of the freshman class a phone call to talk to them. But I think that one of the critical things that we must come together and understand that there is an infiltration of the Sharia practice into all of our operating systems here in this country, as well as we see across Western civilization. So we must be able to recognize that enemy. We cannot have a national security strategy that does not recognize it in specific and understand its goals and objectives. So once again, we can tailor, you know, our internal goals and objectives as far as our security systems, our political systems, economic systems, our cultural and educational systems, so that we can thwart this. And it comes back to one of those strategic goals and objectives previously mentioned about reducing the sphere of influence of this Sharia, you know, ideology that is, you know, tied into Islam. But I think that is the most threatening part, is the Sharia philosophy.
It really is. It's what we'll be talking about with Dinah West momentarily, I'm sure. It is about power, not about faith. And that's a critical conceptual breakthrough. And Alan West, as usual, we're coming to expect these from you. Let me just ask in closing, in the minute we have or so left with you, Congressman-elect Alan West of the 22nd District of Florida, what would you say, what would you hope, maybe is a better way to put it at the moment, since you're still connecting with your colleagues, but what do you anticipate will be the significance of a new generation of veterans like yourself coming into office, most especially in the United States Congress?
Well, I think it's important that now we have people that understand service to this country. They understand the oath that we took, and we had been previously willing to lay down our lives for the to protect and support and defend the Constitution of the United States. I think it is also important to, you know, diversify the members of Congress so that we have citizen legislators and people that come from varying backgrounds. And the trust and confidence that people have in military members is exceptional. And also it's important that you have had people that have been out on this battlefield, Frank, and in many different perspectives and insights that they can bring to the table up in this 112th Congress. So I hope that they will allow us to have a seat at the table, and they will respect our voice and our assessments.
Well, I'm quite confident they will, and it's as it should be. Congressman-elect Alan West of Florida, thank you so much for joining the fray, for being in the arena, as Teddy Roosevelt said, and for being with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. God bless you. Good luck, and we'll look forward to talking with you much more in the future. Next up, we have Dinah West coming on about the big night and the new day of this election season. Stay tuned.
Download podcasts, hear clips, read the bios of the amazing people Frank Gaffney interviews, all at securefreedomradio.org. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Steven and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Steven a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined the superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal, daily, national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Charles the Carpet King will carpet your entire house for only $39. That's right, your entire house for only $39. But don't expect Charles the Carpet King to do it himself, because Charles the Carpet King passed away last week at 47 from the same disease that got his father, so he won't be around for his family. And sadly, it could have been detected early with a simple test, but Charles didn't get it.
Have you gotten the medical test you need? For a list of tests every man should have, go to AHRQ.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
We're back and joined by Diana West, one of the superb columnists that the Washington Examiner features, and she has contributed enormously through her book, The Death of the Grown-Up, and her writings elsewhere, like on bigpeace.com, and not least through her periodic appearances here at Secure Freedom Radio, to our understanding of the nature of the war for the free world that we're in at the moment. And Diana West, it's particularly delightful to have you with us to do a postmortem on this election and what it might mean for the country. So welcome back. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Frank. It's an exciting week.
It is indeed. You wrote a piece that I know appeared in Big Piece, and I imagine elsewhere, called Big Night, New Day. Tell us what you thought of the Big Night and what the New Day portends.
Yes, well, it was a historic night and day, as I think a new day, as I think that people are beginning to understand. I think that the wash of Republican congressional seats in particular, but also state houses and also a tremendous pickup in the Senate, have moved the country to a point on a fulcrum where things could turn around. My concern is that, as we have seen in other periods of Republican ascendance, we have seen Republicans kind of lured by the siren song of compromise thrown up by their Democratic colleagues, and I do have that residual fear that, you know, they could falter, and yet all signs to date are quite positive in the sense of a principled, conservative, guiding theory propelling a perhaps truly exciting turnaround on some of the wild runaway agenda of the Obama administration that we've all been subjected to for the past 2 years.
Yeah. Now, Diana West, we're endlessly told that the American people want compromise. They want the parties to work together to get things done for the public interest, and that only by, you know, finding the middle ground can that aspiration of the American people be satisfied. What you've described really is endlessly portrayed by the press and the left as, you know, a formula for gridlock, and we can't have that. Why is the kind of no-compromise approach that you're talking about so critical in your estimation for getting the country really back on the track it needs to be on?
Well, I think the operative words you just mentioned in terms of who attacks this idea of no compromise, it does come from the liberals and the press, which can be one and the same, as we know. I actually believe that the whole based on gridlock and party of no and all of these things are perhaps even something we can think of as a liberal influence operation to try to undermine simple beliefs, philosophy that we do inherit from the Constitution that we can witness as conservative politics and philosophy. And I think that what we saw in those election results is a clear signal that this is a very appealing belief system that Americans perhaps rediscovered due to the excesses of the first 2 years of the Obama administration. So it is of paramount importance that our Republican leadership, that the new Tea Party faces, that the Republicans who've been brought to office and reelected remain committed to principle and not, again, lured by the siren song of compromise, which is something I wrote in my column that will be out tomorrow, this week. It's not no, it's not obstructionist. It's simply a declaration of belief in limited government, in the philosophy that we inherit from our founders. It is only cloudy obfuscation that tries to portray this in some way as gridlock, as, you know, obstructionism, as failure to be, quote, moderate. Because what you see in compromise, particularly with the Republicans, because, of course, Frank, this never comes up with the Democrats.
Never.
You never expect the Democrats to compromise. But if the Republicans compromise, for example, on across-the-board tax cuts, they're no longer across the board. Or if instead of refusing to lift the debt ceiling, which will be a big issue coming up, they compromise, well, guess what? The debt ceiling goes up. So, in other words, compromise is really a Trojan horse for Democratic politics. And so that is what the Republicans, who I think have been quite gullible in the past and quite gentlemanly, perhaps, or seeking to be civilized and so on, have fallen prey to. And I'm hoping that they really keep their minds on the business of their philosophy.
Yeah. Diana West, the Washington Examiner column and so many other important contributions. Let's narrow this conversation down a little bit as to what you anticipate with respect to national security functions in the new Congress. Specifically, I guess you have written so powerfully and I think with such powerful effect, really, on so many of us about the inadequacy of our understanding and our response to date to the threat that I think we've agreed is best described as Sharia, what it represents, do you envision in this new Congress, many of its members having been elected without addressing these issues at all, as best I can tell, that we're going to see more sensible Republican attitudes prevailing? And most especially, will we see the kind of investigations, at the very least oversight, that's clearly in order in light of the Muslim Brotherhood's influence operations in this country?
Well, this is the wild card, Frank. I think that this is something that we will hoping to be bringing to the fore in our various ways, because this is the key signal issue of our day. Sharia, Islamic law, is the basis of the societies, for example, where we have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of troops and other personnel stationed, namely Iraq and Afghanistan. Sharia is the philosophy that we are seeing changing civil life in our countries of our allies in Europe and indeed in our own country. So this is kind of the I hate the phrase, it's such a cliche, but the elephant in the room that people do need to start examining up close and personal. And it is something that this Congress could take on. There are enough bright, stalwart, interested people who are now in positions of power. So this could become a sensational time to press this forward. One election result I was quite heartened by that I hope is taken quite seriously on the federal level is indeed what the Oklahoma legislature accomplished. The people of Oklahoma voted to amend the state constitution of Oklahoma to prohibit international law and Sharia, Islamic law, from guiding decisions in Oklahoma courts. And this is a signal development. Why not take that up to the national level? This is something that would be extremely crucial for our country to, in other words, preserve itself and preserve its foundations from further attrition.
Yeah. Let me come back to the Oklahoma resolution just a moment, because I think you're absolutely right. That's an important telltale. But Diana West, you have been in your efforts to help us understand the psychology, I guess, as much as anything, that leaves us so vulnerable to this threat, this purported accommodation of religion, which is in fact translating into an acquiescence to a totalitarian political ideology. As it's being advanced in this sort of stealthy way by the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, I think of it as, to reduce it to its essence, it's confusing something that is really all about power with something that is about faith, and thereby giving it protections under our Constitution that it not only doesn't it deserve, because it is a political totalitarian ideology, but it should be prosecuted as sedition. Yeah. And I'd ask you to speak to that one more minute, because I want to see if you think that we have it in us at this point. Do we really have our leaders now beginning to get their hands around this idea that we're dealing with a fifth column inside the United States promoting this seditious totalitarian program?
Well, I think we're at that moment where this could definitely become the defining issue. Now, of course, we've got all these economic pressing issues that need to be addressed, that of course most of the Republicans who are coming to Washington now feel that is their primary function and is certainly of primary importance. Really what you're asking, Frank, is whether there is going to be anyone in this new class in the Congress who is going to open investigations into the impact of Sharia on our foundational institutions, kind of like what we saw in the 1930s when you had a certain congressman, Martin Dyes comes to mind, who founded what became the House Committee on Un-American Activities.
Yes.
Now, he was examining totalitarian ideologies at the time, fascism. He was looking into German penetration, Japanese penetration, and also communist penetration. What we really need is a new congressman who has the strength to withstand all the politically correct assaults that would come on him as they came on people like Martin Dyes, to open up such an investigation. It could be colossal. It could make that person's career. It could save the country. I mean, it would be a fantastic fantastic development. I honestly don't know if in this 2-year span we will see that, but I know that you and I will be pressing for something like
yes,
that.
Yes, we certainly will. Diana West, thank you so much. We'll talk more about Oklahoma in the next week with you, but thank you for your leadership on this, and we've just been talking with Alan West. He may be a man who will help in this regard. We'll see, but thank you for all that you're doing to try to make sure that we understand the nature of the challenge that we're facing from Sharia. Keep it up, and we'll talk to you again very soon. Next up, we have Sarah Carter on what's happening with homeland insecurity. Pete King's views are really relevant. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Ever vigilant. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined the superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal daily national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Charlie, what gives?
Hey, did you see that play last night?
Oh, unbelievable. What do they feed that guy?
Yeah, but they still lost.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when I was playing, what we tried to
you,
do with
you, you played on Biltmore Street.
Hey, come on. I play in the service.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is the kid,
he should have fallen down. Hey, you okay? Stop joking around. Oh, no.
Someone call 911!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke, and many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk, but it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by the marvelous Sarah Carter, the national security correspondent of the Washington Examiner. She is a regular here at Secure Freedom Radio, as I'm happy to say. She is often seen elsewhere at Fox News and other outlets. And Sarah Carter, this is a particularly momentous time to be talking with you. You have been doing some very interesting reporting on a man who is likely to be the chairman once again of the Homeland Security Committee, Pete King. And he's been in the news today about the prospective role and some of the criticisms that he's had about the actual insecurity of our homeland at the moment. So, first of all, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. As always, it's great to have you with us.
It's always great to be on with you as well.
Second of all, let's talk a little bit about Pete King, your reporting, and what's been happening more recently about it.
You know, I spoke with Peter King recently, and we had quite a long conversation. I was able to actually focus my column this past week on his concerns, particularly the concerns that he has regarding our own national security and how the administration, the Obama administration, has been handling national security and policy issues. And, you know, one of the things that I found most interesting is that, you know, he was saying the way we treat terrorist issues as though they're a law enforcement matter, particularly how this administration has been treating it, has only emboldened the terrorists and given them the ability to kind of take a larger control of what they're doing and putting our own national security at risk. So, you know, this was a main topic of conversation for us, and something that I believe he is very concerned about. As you know, he is the ranking Republican on the Committee of Homeland Security, and he is expected and will, by all accounts, take chairmanship of the Homeland Security Committee again come January when they are sworn in. So this is definitely a very topical and interesting conversation that we had.
Yeah, and earlier today, I gather, perhaps as a result of your reporting on his criticisms, perhaps for other reasons, but the President of the United States gave Congressman King a call. What was the substance of that call, as best you can tell, and what might flow from it?
Yes, the president contacted, Congressman King, late Wednesday night. He received a telephone call from the president, and he said he was quite surprised by the call. He wasn't expecting it at all. And the president asked, Mr. King, first congratulated him, taking the House and on his future chairmanship of the committee, but particularly the president reached out. He reached an olive branch out to Mr. King and said, look, I would like you to work with us on national security matters closely with the administration. I want us to work together so that we can come to some kind of resolution on how to handle the issues of terrorism and the terrorists. And particularly, you know, Mr. King has been very vocal about not holding civilian trials in New York City for terrorists. As a matter of fact, not holding them at all anywhere. He believes this is a military matter. And so this is definitely going to be a topic of conversation with the administration. This is something that Mr. King is very focused on and something that we talked about extensively. So it looks like the president is reaching out to Mr. King, despite the fact that Mr. King has been very critical, very, very critical of John Brennan, who is the National Security Advisor to the President, and who Mr. King says basically dictates, not just Mr. King, but other intelligence officials that I've spoken with, dictates policy to the president in the White House much more strongly than any other national security advisor has done in the past with other presidents.
Yeah. So Sarah Carter, we're speaking with Sarah Carter of the Washington Examiner newspaper, where she reports on national security matters. You had a very strong quote from Congressman King in your column earlier this week about John Brennan, and it's one I must say I completely associate myself with. He said, quote, he more than any Homeland Security advisor or national security advisor runs policy. I know people in the intelligence community believe that he is making the decisions and has influence over the president and, of course, of Congress. Because he is a White House employee, I can't call him out for questioning or bring him before a congressional committee. Yet we're hearing, as I understand it, from Congressman King that he intends to hold hearings. He will certainly be bringing others before his committee. What do you think will be the focus of those hearings, and what might we expect to have come out of them? This olive branch from the president, I think commendable as it is, notwithstanding.
Oh, I think King is going to certainly, he told me, hold hearings on the Fort Hood shooting incident and the connections between the Fort Hood shooter and terrorists in Yemen and other terrorist organizations. He is definitely going to be looking at the Yemen bomb plot. He is going to be looking at how we how this administration has been handling national security issues, particularly the Department of Homeland Security, which I know he is very concerned about, issues that Janet Napolitano has been speaking on. So we are going to see a plethora of hearings that are going to focus on the national security of the United States, on terrorism, on this, you know, and particularly, I think what Mr. King is trying to get at is, look, you know, we as a people have to get it through our heads that there are terrorist organizations. And I mean, this is not just Mr. King. These are military commanders I'm speaking to in Afghanistan. These are intelligence officials from a number of different intelligence agencies. We've got to get it through our heads that this is really not just a law enforcement issue, but this is a national security issue. And there are people out there that are intent on hitting us again harder than we were hit on September 11th. And I think the revelation of this Yemen bomb plot is just an example of that, and you know, an example of, once again, we were lucky. Yep. And we have some good people working for us, but we really were just lucky.
We can't count on luck. Sarah Carter, you're absolutely right. Let me segue quickly in the remaining minute or two we have with you, Sarah Carter, because you mentioned Afghanistan. You've recently returned from there. There's an offensive underway in Kandahar. The end of the fighting season is ostensibly at hand. Might we see General Petraeus coming to Congress next year and saying, you know, this idea of scaling back our forces, according to the president's guideline or timeline, is ill-advised? And what would you expect Congress to do, this new Congress, to do should that happen?
You know, I agree with you. I do believe that Petraeus, but remember, he's a politician. He's very political. He knows. He's very savvy with his words. He will come to Congress, and instead of saying that the president's words were ill-advised, he'll say, look, we're not ready yet. The Afghan National Security Forces are not prepared to take over Afghanistan. We still have serious problems that need to be rectified before we can hand this over to them. And scaling back may be a mistake. Right now, even the troops, even with the surge, I mean, we've got to look at, like, a lot of those are just support troops for the ones that are actually on the ground in Kandahar pushing. So we're going to need everybody here to stay here. I really truly believe, and I'll be back in Afghanistan in the spring, that Petraeus is going to find a way to talk to this Congress, particularly now that we have a Republican Congress in control, and say, look, you know, this is not the time to draw back. Maybe in a few months, let's wait and see what happens, because I think the spring is going to be very telling. We saw the insurgency rise this fall, you know, this fall, and in the spring, we'll see that again. We'll see the fighting increase again. So I don't think that will be the time to draw down any forces. I think the spring will be the time that will tell us whether or not we're making any progress.
Okay. Sarah Carter, we'll be watching this closely with you and through you. And thank you so much for your contributions, both at the Washington Examiner and to us here, as well as in your other outlets. Keep up the great work, and keep us apprised in particular as you see this story developing with General Petraeus' assessment. And thanks to all of you for joining us as well. And I hope you'll do so again tomorrow, same time, same station, for more of what you absolutely need to know. Until then, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.